Morning. It's good to be here with all of you and to be able to look at this text this morning. So as usual, I always prepare for my sermon. And a few weeks ago, I started writing down essentially things that we put faith in our lives. And I'm curious, have you ever thought about, or have you ever maybe created a list of things that you put faith in? I mean, it's kind of an odd question. You might only have the purpose of doing that if you were preparing a sermon like this, but it was something that I did, and what I found out is that it was actually a super fascinating thing to do. It's actually surprising how fast a list like that can grow. You know, we have a very modern society, and our society is filled with movement and stuff. And so what ends up happening in a modern society is that you end up putting your faith in a lot of things and not even realizing it. One of the things I acknowledge as I was writing my list is that as consumers, we are some of the most faith-filled people. You might not even realize it, but we are. Just this morning, think about this morning only. You drove here, right, to come and meet with the church. That's what you did. And during that process, you put your faith in literally hundreds, if not thousands of things, without even realizing it, without even thinking about it. I would say that, you know, maybe 98% of us here this morning drove a car. That's probably what we did, yeah? Do you realize how much faith it takes to drive a car? Have you ever thought about that? It takes an incredible amount. There's faith in the vehicle. There's faith in the stoplights. There's faith in the road. There's faith in the people that built the road. There's faith in the people around you that they're not going to hit you. Like, there's all kinds of faith that goes into the process of driving. If you think about it, it begins to get sort of exponential if you start listing those things. But what I want to do is just look at the car for a moment. We're just going to look at the car, not that entire list. In the process of driving, we jump in our car, we put on our seat belts, right? We maybe push in the brake and start it, or we start it and then push in the brake, and then we put the car in gear. And we do all of this sort of subconsciously. We're not really thinking about it. It becomes habit. And we do this hoping, essentially, that the car is going to work just fine. That when we turn the key, it's going to start. And that not only that, but the car is built properly so that it will run and we can drive it and not die. And then we also think about the sort of individual systems in the car. And one of the things maybe we didn't realize is that these individual systems are designed by individual people who are supposed to make them so they work seamlessly together, so we don't have to worry about the whole process. Of course, we can't see who built our vehicle, can we? Unless, you work at an automotive place, but we can't see who built our vehicle. Maybe we don't even know when it was built or how it was built or what tools they used or where the parts came from. And yet we readily put our lives into the hands of this car and its many components. It's just like second nature. And we are expecting this car and these many components to fulfill their purpose so that we can get to where we need to go. Now here's what's interesting. Just believing that a car is built properly because it's, say, a Toyota or Honda, you know, the good brands that are reliable, and I drive a Jeep, by the way, so that's like, I know it's not as good. That doesn't actually mean that we have faith in the vehicle just because we believe it's built properly. If you think about it, belief in a car's quality, belief in how the car is built is useless, really, to us unless we have faith enough to try and use that car. It doesn't serve as well just to assume that it's built properly if we don't actually use it. So without use, a car doesn't really serve much of a purpose. It's like a giant paperweight in our driveway. So in faith, what do? We turn the key and the engine starts, you know, combustion happens, and off we go. I also wonder, have we ever considered what we're putting our faith in when we use a car? Think about it. We are literally putting ourselves in a device that is designed to have micro explosions over and over again, 3 feet in front of us. Like, that's what we're putting our faith in. So it, in my mind, it makes it a little less crazy that we would put our faith in God. That seems safer to me than even our cars. While we're on that topic, by the way, I was thinking of other things that we put our faith in. And the one that really struck me is the radiation box that is the microwave. Like, why we would put our trust in this thing is crazy. But we do. We cook our food in it sometimes. They reheat our food. So almost daily, though, we put our faith and our life into something that was assembled by hands that we haven't seen, made of parts that we believe are engineered correctly, operating with the hope, essentially, that everything will work together and work out so that we can travel to where we need to go. That's what we do. I was thinking just of another quick example. Right now, every single person in this room is putting their faith in something. Well, that is if you're sitting. Which is funny, Arlene, that you use that example. But the reality is that most of us came in and we sat in our chair without even a second thought of it. We put our rear ends in the safety of something that was designed by a manufacturer from who knows where, counting on this chair that it was built properly to hold us up. And we just did this without even a second thought. Maybe it's because we've sat in chairs before and they've held us, but maybe we haven't sat in this exact chair. How do we know this exact chair is going to hold us? We just have faith that it was built properly and correctly and it's going to hold us. In reality, every day we move from one faith-based decision to the next with little thought. And I don't know if this is true for you or not, but for me, ironically, I've had some major crises of faith when it comes to trusting God. I put my faith in so many little things throughout the day, but I sometimes struggle with faith in God. You know, there was a season when I almost abandoned faith altogether, when I almost threw in the towel with it. But it was in this season that I began to realize something essential for my faith. That faith without hope, or faith without action, has really no merit. It doesn't serve a purpose. I want you to recall the words from the book of James. This is James 2:17. The writer says, "Faith without works is dead." It's pretty strong language, but I have to agree with that statement. Essentially, what gives faith life is how we live it. Faith should always be propped up by hope and by action. You might call this concept theology with legs. That's what I call it. So a challenging question I want us to ponder this morning as we explore the text is our faith full of hope? And does our faith have legs? Leading into this morning's sermon, you heard a portion of the book of Hebrews that was read. And this letter was written to a group of Jewish Christians who had this very rigid understanding and background in the old covenant, in the old understanding. And they were now under the freedom that came with Jesus, but they found themselves in the middle of a faith crisis. Things were going on around them that they were scared about their new faith. And it also felt really different because all of these Gentiles were joining, and what do we do with them? So they were in this faith crisis. And so the author of Hebrews, he's writing this letter and he's reaching out to these people and he's recognizing that they're struggling. And so he gives them these hope-filled words and also tells all of these stories. Especially in Hebrews 11, there's a list of stories. And I want to just recount the words that they wrote, even though you just heard them. I'm going to read from the Voice translation, which is a really neat translation, by the way, if you've ever read it. Faith is the assurance of things you have hoped for, the absolute conviction that there are realities you've never seen. It was by faith that our forebears were approved. Through faith, we understand that the universe was created by the word of God. Everything we now see was fashioned from that which is invisible. Faith begins as hope and indeed is unseen. So many doubt that it is real. What follows is the proof that faith is a reality that can be trusted. Now, the author of Hebrews goes on to tell one story after the next. And these stories were all really familiar to these Jewish Christians because they had grown up hearing about them all throughout their childhood and into their adulthood. And if you look closely at the entire chapter of Hebrews 11, you'll see a pattern emerge. See, each of these stories tells about a person who chose hope. And their hope led to practicing out their faith through action. Each story has that same formula in it. But rather than a linear process, we sort of see this circular process where hope then leads to faith, which then leads to action. And that action leads to more hope, which then leads to a greater sense of faith, which then leads to more action. That's what you see this process take place. And in this portion of Hebrews that we're just looking at, because we're not looking at the whole chapter, we're looking at the story of Abraham. Obviously, we know Abraham was commended for his faith. He followed God's leading into a situation with many unknowns. And you know what? Not only were there many unknowns for Abraham as he followed God, that's what we see in the story, but he also realizes that some of these promises that God is giving him are not going to be fulfilled in his lifetime. Abraham practices this process of hope, faith, and action over and over again in this story while only experiencing really a little bit of tangible results. For example, it says that he lived long enough for his son to be born. So we know that Abraham saw that fulfilled promise. It was a seemingly impossible promise to be fulfilled, yet it takes place in his lifetime. But the text is also clear. It says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. There's an assumption that often comes with faith. That is, if I have enough faith, God will allow things to work out in my favor. And not only that, not only will they work out, but they will work out how and when I expect them to work out. I've actually heard sermons preached on this, that if you just have enough faith, if you just have enough faith, things are going to work out for you exactly as you hoped for. That somehow faith is this magic pill that one takes to make life better. Of course, that's not actually the whole story we read in Scripture. In fact, we read lots of stories that are counter, where people have incredible faith and things still don't work out great for them. In fact, the reality of faith is that it quite possibly could lead us into more chaos. There's risk with faith. I recognize that this is not a great sort of statement for a selling point to help convince people to have faith. I get that. But the reality of following Jesus is that it's really hard to follow Jesus. It takes resilient faith, especially because life is chaotic and bad things happen. Frankly, though, this is why we must have hope, faith, and action all together. That we can't just rely on faith to stand on its own. The reality is that faith on its own is an unstable tower unless we have action, unless we have hope to support it, to keep it stable. I want you to think about this for a moment. If you've ever had a crisis of faith, I would assume that probably a good portion of us have had a season or two in our life where we've had a crisis of faith. So if you've ever had a crisis of faith, what helped you to restore your faith? What happened where your faith was restored? Maybe it hasn't been restored, but those of you who have had a crisis, what happened? I would guess, just guessing, that whatever it was that helped restore your faith, I would guess that it involved something like an increase in hope or witnessing a transformational action. Maybe something happened to you or you witnessed something happened. Maybe it was both. Maybe it was a combination of hope and a transformational action that helped restore your faith. Of course, then on the flip side, I'd also imagine that someone who has experienced a profound loss of faith can literally pinpoint the beginning of this loss or the culmination of this loss to a moment when there was a decay in hope, or they witnessed a hypocritical action, or that they actually witnessed faith without action. You know, I know quite a few people who no longer embrace faith in God. I've had conversations with them. I've heard their stories. I've learned what experiences led to that. And literally every single one of those people can pinpoint experiences that empowered them to lose faith. And these experiences all have common themes. Those themes are hope lost, wrong action, or witnessing inaction. That's what has helped culminate or even begin the process of loss of faith. Now, I'm not trying to take the responsibility off of these folks by saying this. After all, faith has an element of choice, a choice we make in spite of circumstances. But the reality is that faith has a temporary lifespan when it is not supported without hope and action. It cannot stand on its own. It has to have the undergirding that comes with radical hope and action expressed out of faith. So what might we learn from all this? Well, first I want to talk about personal faith. To have a stable faith, we must be people of hope. And having hope looks like trusting God's promises. But it's not only trusting God's promises, it's also having relentless optimism that goodness can come out of any situation. That is hard to do, I know. But we are called to a kind of relentless optimism that stems from our hope that we have. And our hope is rooted that in ultimately, that in the end, that God's love wins. That's what our hope is rooted in. Of course, the result of which is a collision between heaven and earth. That's what God's love winning looks like. Additionally, for our faith to mature, we have to be people of action. Our faith should be lived out in how we love one another, how we forgive one another, but also in how we respond to God's Spirit when it speaks to us and leads us. Part of faith in action on a personal level is listening to the Spirit and taking steps when it calls you to take steps and trusting the process. Action gives our faith a greater depth. It gives it greater meaning. And not only that, but action in our faith is also a public witness of the person we follow, that is Jesus. Action, by the way, is the way in which we can, as the psalmist says, taste and see that the Lord is good. We have to try out our faith. We have to see what comes from it. Now let's talk about the church's faith, and I'm going to kind of wrap up with this. Does our faith as a church model relentless hope? Are we a group of people who believe in this sort of relentless hope? What about this? Does our faith express hope for one another and hope for the world? It should. We're living in a world full of violence and poverty and hate and racism and economic and environmental exploitation. You've all seen the news. I don't have to list every single thing, but we live in a world where there is this kind of chaos. And the reality is that the church is called to speak into these situations with hope. That is our calling. But just speaking hope is not enough. There also must be action. Action is essential to our faith, not only personally, but also as our collective witness of God's love for the world. Action is what props up our faith as a group of people who claim to follow Jesus. This is why the church acts against things that do not represent the God we love and the God who so loved the world. If we want to counter violence, then we practice nonviolence. If we say that we believe in forgiveness, then we should be the kind of people who fight to end things like the death penalty, which steals a person's chance at redemption. If we say that all people should be fed and taken care of and we want to fight poverty, then we should feed people and support a living wage. You know, we've all heard the phrase, actions speak louder than words. And this is true for the church. Our hope, our actions, they paint a picture of our faith that all the world will see. The world is watching the church, and they're wondering, are these people going to live out the values that they claim to have? They claim to have faith. Are they going to have hope? Are they going to have action? What kind of picture does God want us to paint? That's a question we should always ask ourselves. My prayer for you, all of you, and for me, is that we might be people who prop up our faith with hope and action. And my prayer for us as a church is that we might do likewise. Thank you.